Hey, this is Bria Grant from Best Friends Forever, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
Alright, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode 111, the sign of the devil's cousin.
Whoa. What would the devil's cousin's name be?
He's Beazel Scott.
What?
Sorry.
That seems unfair. That's
your name. Maybe okay. He's Beazel Jeff.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Beazel Jeff. Love it.
Oh God, sorry, but today's a special episode. We have actress, director, writer, comic producer Bria Grant.
Yes. Awesome,
she was so much fun, man. She was one of our super early interviews back in the puberty stage of our website.
Yeah,
but she finally came on episode 111.
That's when our podcast was text based only.
It was text based only, but she's on episode 111 to talk about her upcoming film, Best Friends Forever, which is out pretty much right now.
Right now, yeah. So everybody should go. If you did not, for some reason, you didn't listen to us and back the campaign, then you need to go to iTunes and pick it up now. And you know, even if you did back the campaign, go to iTunes and pick it up now.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Why not?
It's an awesome story too of an indie movie done right, I think. So
yeah,
it's good to hear, and we are excited to let everybody hear that. Yeah. But first,
let's do the rundown.
Today's podcast, we're going to do the interview. Obviously, we're going to talk about what's going on in our lives, and then sort of as a Best Friends Forever themed Naquato, we asked you.
Who would you bring on your friend, your buddy trip through the apocalypse?
Yeah. Where was that? Where
Ash
is
didn't
the
write
Naquato?
That in the notes, but I remembered it off the top of my head.
I don't think I wrote it in the notes.
Yeah.
But it was who would you bring with you on your, best friend buddy trip through the apocalypse?
Yes. I knew that. I mean, that's why I set it up as such, but it was nowhere in the notes. And now I feel stupid.
It's all right.
Do you want to do that part again?
No. We're just onward. We're going to keep going. Yeah.
All right.
Rolling with it.
So, Scott.
Yes.
Save yourself. What have you been up to this week?
Okay. Yeah. So, I started playing Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep, which is totally D&D inspired and super awesome in Borderlands 2, I guess I should say. It's really impressive and really funny. And there's a lot of comedy and kind of like amazed at how they did like sort of the dynamic things with the environment as if you were like actually LARPing and things were happening, like changing around you. I thought that was really neat. So I don't know how far I am through it, but maybe just like an hour or two, but it's awesome. And
that's cool.
I don't know if I did anything else this week. That's really sad. When did we last talk? Was it a short time frame? Am I just making up excuses?
I missed the last one, so I haven't talked to you guys in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I feel like I'm missing something, but
the last one you did, it was last Friday, and you were you hung out with Abby Heppy, which was awesome, by the way. You guys did a great job with that interview. I will give you all pats on the backs.
She was super cool, and that was
she's pretty much one of the raddest people we've met through this site, I think.
Right, and like right one of the first too. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's very tolerant and patient with us.
She's like, oh, you idiots. Yes.
Did I beat The Last of Us. I tried the multiplayer. Did I say that last week? I don't remember.
I haven't heard of you beating it, but how'd you like it?
It was great. The multiplayer I thought was fun. In my opinion, it's like there's so many other games to play. I don't know that it could sustain my interest for too long, but I thought their approach to the multiplayer was interesting. In the sense that it like uses your Facebook friends list to sort of create like this narrative where you're trying to build a survivor camp, and by competing in the multiplayer you're like keeping your gang alive and safe and stuff like that. But I think the major takeaway for me from The Last of Us was the bow and arrow, because that like really did it for me.
That's awesome.
And it was the only thing I used in the multiplayer. I was like, who needs guns? This bow and arrow is amazing.
so, and you can retrieve your arrows, which is like the best
thing.
Yeah.
And it's
Thanks,
silent.
Hunger Games.
Yeah. And it's completely silent too. So when stealth is of the essence, as it often is in The Last of Us, the bow and arrow becomes your best friend. So Matt, since you've been gone for a while, what's been going on, man?
Yeah, I just realized I've been gone for 2 weeks. I wasn't even thinking about that. But
yeah.
You know, I started gaming again finally because I have not actually turned on a console or a PC to play a game in a very, very long time. And so I picked up back into Tomb Raider because I haven't beat it yet.
Sweet.
It's such a fun game, man. I just really enjoy playing the game.
Also a great bow and arrow game.
Yeah, that's why I was saying thanks, Hunger Games. I think like it's funny because it's like Hunger Games came out, sold like a billion copies, and now it's like bow and arrow, all the things, you know, like all over the place.
I'm okay with that.
It's fine. I'm cool with it. It's a different mechanic, and that's cool with me. But the game is so well done, you know, and I wanted to hate it because it really looked terrible when I first played it. Mm-hmm. Not terrible like terrible looking. It seemed very weird. It had a weird vibe, and I wasn't into it. And then
you're like, there's no
playing,
way this game's
like,
going to hold up.
Yeah, so much fun, so much fun. And then I watched Hansel and Gretel on Blu-ray with my wife.
Nice.
Because she's very into that kind of stuff. So this is the worst endorsement I'm ever going to give a movie, but it's not as shitty as you think it would be.
Well,
Hillary watched it too, like last week.
Hillary watched it, I think, last week, yeah.
She watched it and liked it, and which is funny because we usually have opposite opinions on movies. We like a lot of the same games sometimes, but we don't like the same movies all the time. But it's not at all what I expected. It's like Sam Raimi kind of campy and gory and just fun. Like, it was fun to watch. And, you know, the plot is kind of whatever. There's a couple like weird plot holes in it. And it's a first-time director. Like, this is the first thing he's ever done. He's Australian. And he was in film school, and he went to the teacher and was like, I have this idea about what happened to Hansel and Gretel after all the stuff. Like, what happens when they grew up? And maybe they're witch hunters because they hated that witch that tried to eat them, you know? And the teacher was like, that's actually a really good idea.
Brilliant. Here's $50 million.
So the teacher said to him, don't tell anyone else till you get to Hollywood. And so, you know, he finishes school, he moves to LA, and sure enough, like, it was his first meeting ever with a Hollywood executive. Jesus. And was like, here's this idea I have for a movie, and they were like, purchased.
Wow.
And then he was like, and then he said he was on the plane watching what's the bomb movie that Jeremy Renner's in?
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker. He said he was on the plane watching Hurt Locker and just suggested to the executive, he's like, I think Jeremy Renner would make a really great Hansel. And he's like, and they were like, yeah, he would. You should send something to him. So they sent him, all they sent him was this image, a still image, like a poster of Hansel and Gretel holding like the crossbow and the shotgun and like walking away while a witch was burning. And he was like, that looks really badass. Send me the script.
Wow.
And then liked it and then did the movie. Like, everybody that came in this movie, I've never heard of a movie just falling into place is what they made it seem like happen. But it was good. It was entertaining. You know, it's worth a rental. I wouldn't buy it by any means if you aren't super into like campy action horror-ish movies. But cool. It's super gory and tons of cussing. Like, it was not at all what I expected to watch.
Wow.
It was much different than I thought it was going to be. So, but it's good.
Actually,
it's a good movie.
Me want to watch this film now.
You should. Yeah, rent it. Like, you're up there, rent it in the woods and sit outside on your iPad or something. I don't know.
That's a good segue, actually.
So how about you, Ash?
I'm in the woods. Broadcasting from the fucking forest.
You don't have underwear on your mic, so I'm proud
of
you.
No, I don't. I've upgraded this year.
Anybody that remembers from last year's podcast.
The thing that's really actually kind of cool is Amazon actually delivers to me now. So I've been ordering crap like crazy from Amazon. When I got here.
Actually, when I mailed you the mystery boxes that we're teasing for next week,
so
I forget who I was talking to, and they were like, is it going to get to them? And I was like, yeah. And they were like up in the mountains? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure the Postal Service goes everywhere.
Yeah, me too. So they've been delivering stuff. But anyway, I'm up in the Smokies visiting family, and it's a super small town. I don't even know, like maybe less than 10,000 people or something like that. Tiny little place. And I'll be here for a little while before San Diego Comic-Con, where Matt, myself, and Hillary will be.
Yeah.
in terms of what I've been doing this week, I was able to download Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep while up in the mountains. And so I've been playing that.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it only took like 50 hours to download. Right. But no, but it's incredible, man. And if you're not a fan of Borderlands 2, you could, I wouldn't say just start with this DLC, but it's such a unique take on the Borderlands universe because it is all told as basically Tiny Tina is telling this story. They're playing a tabletop game, and so you jump into the tabletop game and it's narrated by the character of Tiny Tina, who is played by Ashley Birch, who we had on a couple episodes ago. And she's kind of
the DM.
Yeah, the DM of this adventure with the original Vault Hunters, and you're going through these, you know, fantasy worlds, and it's just filled with humor, and there's a lot of really topical humor about, like, you know, who's a real gamer, and all these, you know, all of these hot topics right now in the gaming world are all part of this DLC. But at its core, there's a lot of really sweet moments as well. You know, she's trying to cope with the death of a major character, which is why she put together this whole fantasy world for her friends to play in. And near the end, I'm not going to lie, I got kind of emotional near the end of this ridiculous DLC that's mainly comedy. But at the end, there's some really, really well-written, tender moments near the very end, which I thought were great. But definitely, definitely loved Tiny Tina's Assault and Dragon Keep. And other than that, man, just hanging out and doing mountain stuff. I went and picked up some jam yesterday.
You pet a horse?
I pet a horse, yeah. Scott's like, hey, can you get on and play Borderlands? I'm like, hold on, I'm petting a horse. And I sent him a picture of me petting a horse. So, yeah.
That's not an innuendo. Nice. You're actually just petting a horse.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's about it, guys.
Awesome. Just petting horse. You should take us somewhere.
Okay.
In this podcast.
So, we are here with actor, writer, director Bria Grant, whose directorial debut, Best Friends Forever, goes live for purchase on July 1st. How's it going, Bria?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on our little show and hanging out and talking to us.
It's oh my God. Thank you, guys. You guys have been very nice to me in the past, so I figured
you've been nice to us.
And ask you to help me promote this movie.
No. I mean, it's totally cool. Like, you've been, supportive of us in the past. You were actually one of our first interviews like almost 3 years ago, so we've managed to kind of keep in touch, and you've been always super supportive of our little site, so anything we can do to help you out is, like, you know, our pleasure. Absolutely.
Oh, cool. Great. Yeah. So, I have many more things then. No, I'm just kidding. I need, like, my whole change. Is that cool?
I'll fail miserably at it, but there'll be shit all over the place and your car might explode, but I'll give it a shot. Why not?
All right. Fair enough.
So, you are actually right now in Louisiana, and you're all cleaned and showered up and ready to go. Sorry, I had to call you out on that. What are you actually doing down there in Louisiana?
I literally just rolled out of bed, which is the joke you're making. I am, because I've been doing late night shoots. Actually, last night was not too bad, but I am shooting a movie called Smothered, which is it's a horror movie starring a lot of, like, major horror icons. Me not being one of those people, but it's Kane Hodder. It's R.A. I can't ever say his name right, but it's R.A. Mikhailoff, I think is how you say it. Yeah. Bill Moseley, a bunch of guys like that who've played these, like, major horror villains, you know, at one point in time. Don Shanks, too. So it's like, you know, they were in I Know What You Did Last Summer. They were in the Halloween movies. They were French, Jason, French. You know, like, so it's like all these great guys. And they're all playing themselves. And they go, and it's sort of a story about them and their careers and how their careers are sort of like, you know, they're not making the money that people think they make, kind of thing. And then they go and haunt a trailer park and end up getting get paid to haunt a trailer park, and then they end up getting haunted themselves.
That's awesome. What a great concept.
It's amazing. Well, it's amazing working with those guys because, one, they're all, like, the majority of them are all stunt guys, first and foremost. You know, that's how they got into the business. Yeah. And so, like, when you're doing these, like, crazy stunts or when you're doing stuff, they're just, like, they're totally safe, but they're like really good. And there's something just really nice about that. And they've also all been acting for like 40 years, you know, and some of them, like Don Shanks is in his like late 60s, I think. And so he's just like, you know, they just take everything in stride, like nothing is real and everything is so like, yeah, it's amazing. And then the director is John Schneider, who I know from being the dad on Smallville, but I think other people know from being.
I love John Schneider.
Yeah, yeah, he was Bo Duke in The Duke's Hazard. So he, I mean, and he's awesome too. So it's like just like the nicest set full of like the most amazing, cool people. Mm-hmm. And it's been like such a great experience, even though I'm playing like the craziest character. I'm like unrecognizable.
Actually. Oh, wow. I can't wait to see that. I actually heard like John Schneider is like one of the nicest people in the business. Everyone I've ever that has encountered him said he's like the sweetest dude. So that must be nice working with him.
Yeah, on the planet. He's the nicest person on the planet.
Yeah, like, that's what I hear.
Yesterday we had this like, there's like a bunch of dogs in this movie. I don't know. And so there's a dog cameo and these people show up and I'm like, where do they find these people? Like this lady literally walks into the set and starts like smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer, like on set. Like, and I was like, where did this person come from with this dog? Like why would this person with this trained dog, is me being spoiled from Los Angeles. And they're like, oh no. John met her at a bar and told her dog could be in the movie. Like very much like him, because people recognize him, especially from Dukes of Hazzard. And he is like so nice to them, and you know, and then invites them. He's like, oh yeah, I'm shooting a movie, you want to come put your dog in, you know, whatever. Like he's like nice. It's super crazy.
Totally makes their month by doing that too. That's amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I do have to briefly tell a story that is kind of funny. So I was in a movie with you, and I've been meaning to tell this on the podcast for a while. You came to Orlando to shoot Homecoming, and I had been following you on Twitter from back when you were on Heroes, and you said, hey, I'm in Orlando. I'm doing this indie film called Homecoming. It needs extras, and my wife and I ran out, and we were in the background for a couple of days as extras, and we actually played teachers of yours.
That's right.
At some party, and it was such a cool experience. And for those people that don't know that are listening, I'm a teacher in real life when I'm not doing this, so it was kind of ironic. And then my students, they found me on IMDb, and I have an IMDb credit as a teacher in this movie Homecoming. So I get asked all the time, like, what's this movie Homecoming? Why are you in this movie? And I'm like, I can't talk about it. It's another life. It's top secret. I can't mention anything. But that was really, really cool. And I just had a lot of fun doing that. So I figured I'd bring that up and tell you that story.
Have you seen it? Have you seen yourself in the movie?
I did. Actually, Sean came to Orlando and showed it off the following year. And so I hung out with Sean just for the screening, and I actually did get a chance to see it, and I loved it. I thought you did an incredible job, and I'm not just saying that because I'm in it. I really, I really, really enjoyed the film. I thought it was great, so I'm glad.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, that's like such a. It was so weird for me to go do that because I was like coming off like such big things, and it was such a tiny movie, and I like really wanted to go do it, and it was such a drama for me to go do that movie because I mean at the time I was at this huge agency. And my agency was like, no, you can't go do that.
Oh, really?
They were like, you are not allowed to go to do that. And they're like, if you do that, we are not going to be your agency anymore. And I was just like, I was like, peace out. And I went and did it, which was, you know, it's not the totally most appropriate thing to do as an actor. But it was, I think it was really good for me to go do something like that because, you know, since then I've done a bunch of little indies and they're super fun. The bummer about that movie is that it's not available anywhere yet, which I wish it was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's kind of, I've been meaning to, you know, get a copy of it for myself just so I can, you know, show my family. Like, there I am in the background. Check that out.
I think they're still in the process because the EPs of that movie are involved in my movie, and so we talk about it sometimes, and they had a distributor, and the distribution company like went out of business or something, which actually happens more often than you would imagine. And so I think they're still trying to figure out like how to distribute it properly.
Yeah. Sorry, that's
my lack of sleep.
I can't speak most of the time. So so yeah, we'll talk a bit about distribution and stuff when we're talking about Best Friends Forever, because you're coming out on a number of different formats, and I want to make sure people know where to find your stuff. So so we'll get into that. The last thing I wanted to ask you about is I remember when we did our print interview with you a long time ago, I asked you because I'm a creep and I research people before I interview them. So
that's good. If you don't, it makes me really mad.
No. So I did. And you were actually a history major in college, right?
Yeah.
That is the coolest thing. And what made you kind of change your mind and lean toward acting? Was it because you discovered you could act?
I have a master's degree in American studies, which for those like nerds that know American studies, American studies is like a mix of history and sort of a cultural studies degree. But I have a master's degree in that. And because I didn't start acting until I was 24, 25.
Okay.
I was taking history classes. Or I was in grad school and like, I fucking hated it. It was not for
me. I love the honest answer. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are people who are just really into it. And I just had this moment where I looked around the room and I was like, these people are so much more into this and better at it than I am. Yeah. And like, I just didn't want to put my time into something where I didn't feel like I was going to be successful. And I also like, I didn't have the drive to do it, you know, like, it's a very like competitive field to be in, especially in the humanities and grad school, in like, you know, have a graduate degree and then go and try to find like a college position and, you know, get tenure, do that whole drama. And I was like, you know, I just did not have the drive to do it. And at the time, I started acting when I was a little kid, and when I was in grad school, I was so miserable. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something like for me that's like going to be my, because in grad school, you're just like constant. All you do is grad school. That's like, you know, you're reading like 4 or 5 books a week and like, you're just trying to like, you know, keep up. And I was like, I'm just going to do something for me, you know, and take one night off a week and just like do something amazing. And so I took an acting class to kind of get back into it. And I was like, this is what I want to be doing, which totally everyone who knew me out there. And then one day I was like, I'm going to move to LA and just like see how that works out. And my friends were like, who've known me for years, were like, what? Like, it was like the craziest.
That is incredible. Like,
it would be like literally, I think, just anybody saying like one day being like, I'm going to be a rock star. You know, like it's like, yes, no, like bearing on real life. Because I mean, I didn't really know any actors. I didn't know anybody who did anything like that except the people in my acting class in Austin, Texas. And wow. I'd only been taking the acting class for about 3 or 4 months before I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing the total wrong thing right now.
That is such a cool transition though. And like you've done so much since you made that decision, you know, from writing comics to now writing and directing your own film, which is just a huge, huge accomplishment. So.
Right. Except that I did like wait tables for like 2
days. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be like, and then I moved to LA and was wildly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You didn't just show up in LA and immediately have an agency and everything worked out perfectly.
Like you, TV, now. No, it was pretty horrible when I first moved there.
Everything we hear that it's a painful amount of work to get any sort of jobs out there. So
it's a very chicken and egg kind of thing. You know, it's like, well, you can't get a good agent until you find a good job, but you can't get a good job until you get a good agency. It's horrible.
So let's start talking about Best Friends Forever. And I went back and reread the interview that we ran with you, like I said, almost 3 years ago. And you mentioned Best Friends Forever, not by name, but you said you were writing a script with your friend Vera, and that this is the, someone asked you, what would your dream role be? And you answered by saying, hey, I'm writing this script with my friend Vera, which I'm assuming was the Best Friends Forever script. How long did it take you to write, and kind of where did you get the inspiration to actually create this post-apocalyptic road trip film?
That is so crazy. I did not know that I did that. That I answered that. That's so amazing. Because Vera always says to me, she's like, I always say, this is a 2-year process. And she always goes, Bria, it's a 3-year process. And I'm like, well, I don't include the writing. So we actually started writing like a straight up horror movie. And I think, you know, the reason it would be my dream role is because I got to kind of control my own characters, you know, and whenever I was writing, which was super fun. Mm-hmm. But we started writing like a very straight up, like, you know, bloody, gory horror movie with like in a like contained place and that kind of thing, so we could get it done for pretty cheap. And then we were doing research and we went and watched that movie Martyrs. Do you know that movie Martyrs?
I have not seen it, no.
It is the most, well, here's the thing, don't see it. Because I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing horror movie, but it is also so horrifying that we were like, Vera turned to me and she's like, let's write a rom-com. And I was like, no, I don't know. I like started thinking, I was like, I don't want to subject myself to, you know, which is what happens to you when you're an actress in a horror movie where you run around and just like, you're crying for like 3 or 4 weeks at a time, you know, because you're just, it's emotionally draining. So we kind of were like, threw that idea aside. And then I was driving through West Texas and was like, called Vera up and I was like, what if we wrote a movie about an apocalypse happening, but people are in the middle of nowhere, like in West Texas, where there's like no cell phone reception and there's not like a gas station for like 20 miles at a time, and they don't know that it happened. Oh, and wow. She was like, yeah, let's do that. And so we ended up writing it. So it took us about, almost a year probably to get this done. I mean, because we're both actresses. So we both, you know, I mean, we both have to make a living another way. I mean, maybe it took a little bit less. Maybe it was more like 6 months or something. But we wrote the script and then, you know, would do readings and then we'd throw everything out and restart it or whatever. And yeah, so it took a while to get the script done. And then, you know, a while to actually get the money for it and get it made. So, yeah, all in all, it ended up being like a 3-year process.
Wow,
which
that's incredible.
It's probably why at this point I'm just like so tired of it.
You're like, just make this movie come out so I can stop thinking about it.
Oh, my God, stretch. Tell me about it.
I bet. I mean, it's just like from just watching you promote it and tweet about it. And we'll talk about your Kickstarter campaign and stuff in a few minutes. But like you've been working your ass off to like show people this film. And you know, we totally admire that, but it did seem like a ton of work. In terms of the theme of the movie though, it's interesting you guys chose this like post-apocalyptic theme, because it seems to be, not to say it's popular right now, but it seems to be more acceptable as a theme for a film or a video game.
It's like fascination with it.
It is weird, right? Yeah. In the past like 5-6 years, like, you know, my mom's like, I want to go see World War Z. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
I know. I actually just saw World War Z and it was like one of these moments. I was watching it and I was like, oh, this could be super helpful to my movie, But then also I was like, wow, this is like they really took an apocalypse and made it like almost family friendly,
right?
In a way.
There was no gore in that film, right?
I know. And it was so like, it was such a, it's like, it was like universally, like, you know, anybody could go, I could tell anybody to see that movie. It's not like telling people to see, you know, some random, like, I thought it would have more bite to it. And it was like, you literally had like a happy ending, you know? Like, that's so rare for an apocalyptic tale.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just funny that, like, now, you know, culturally, it is, you have like the biggest movie star in the world, Brad Pitt, in this zombie film. As a theme, it's such a strange, and then you have, you know, in the video game world, you have this game Last of Us, which is just getting the most critical acclaim, I think, of all time, almost of any game. So what do you think it is right now as a society, why we are, you know, accepting of games and films like this, and why is this something that kind of is appealing to us?
I mean, I think that I think that horror movies and science fiction movies and video games and books and whatever come along and get popular, like, because there is like something within the cultural zeitgeist that is like, you know, that leads us to have these fears or these thoughts or whatever. And I think right now, I mean, and this is a total, like, I mean, this is off the cuff. I have no idea. I hadn't thought about this at all. Yeah. But because I've been noticing the apocalyptic things, you know, I just saw This Is the End also. And I was like, oh, my God, this is like my movie. If my movie was funny. Because all I'm thinking about is my own movie right now.
Well, I don't blame you.
I do think that there is something about, because we are all so interconnected throughout the world, you know, so, you know, I can go and call someone in China via Skype or communicate with someone, you know, be talking to people, you know, in, you know, fucking Africa via Reddit or something. Mm-hmm. Because we're so connected, I think it makes everything feel so much smaller. And so the possibility of there being like a worldwide problem feels so much more close, feels closer to home, you know, like, because things that happen in China do affect us. And because it, you know, it just seems, we just get information so fast and we're so interconnected. I think that there is a huge fear of all that being turned off or turned against us in some way, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because 50 years ago, I don't think they were worried about, maybe 50 years ago, we'll say 100 years ago, I don't think they're worried about a disease starting in, where did they decide it was started in World War Z? I don't know.
What did they say? I think it was China. No. It was China. South Korea, I think.
South Korea, right. Oh, yeah. I don't think 100 years ago they were like, South Korea, if South Korea got a disease, we'd all be screwed. You know, like, that wasn't even a thought.
They were like, where is South Korea 100 years ago?
Right, exactly. Whereas now I think it's a much bigger, I think that we're just so connected with the rest of the world that world issues feel like a bigger deal, you know? Yeah. It's globalization.
That's a really actually an awesome answer, because I didn't have an answer to that question myself. I was just kind of curious what you thought.
Well, that was my dynamic, so I don't know.
So this is like the second time I read We Will Bury You when it was out. The story, I loved it. It was awesome. But this is the second time you've kind of toyed with, like, it's, you know, like We Will Bury You set in a zombie setting, right? But not really about zombies necessarily. Is there something that like drives you to kind of play with the genre without, you know, without writing a straight up kind of horror flick zombie movie or a zombie comic? It seems like you like to toy with it more and write a story around the fact that there is a zombie. You're just like, yeah, there's a zombie apocalypse going on, but look at these people.
Yeah. Well, I think horror movies and science fiction stories at their best are stories in which we're able to deal with big issues because big things are happening. And I feel like, I mean, like, I think as far as like the best horror and genre stuff generally is one that like that tells a good story and deals with like these bigger cultural issues. Like, so in Best Friends Forever, you know, one of the big things I wanted to deal with, I mean, because it's really, I mean, I call it an apocalyptic road trip movie, but in reality, it is a friendship buddy movie that happens to happen to take place during a nuclear bomb detonation. Like, that's my, that is like, it's just like, it's on the background of that. It's similarly to We Will Bury You was sort of a love story taking place, you know, that there is also a zombie outbreak at the same time. For me, I'm much more interested in you know, human interaction and things along those lines. And so for Best Friends Forever, it was sort of like what's most important to you when the world falls apart, which I think is something that sometimes we can only like think about that in those big issue,
things.
So like, it's like, who was the first person you called when 9/11 happened? You know, like, who was, and what's the thing that you're like, God, why did I yell at that person? If the world ended today, if something massive happened and you couldn't make a phone call and you couldn't do anything, like, who would be the person you would be like, fuck, like, I need to go and tell them this really important thing? Because we all have those moments, you know, and I think it makes you really question what's important to you. And sometimes we can't do that until something really big happens. Not necessarily a nuclear apocalypse. It could just be like, oh, like, a, you know, I just say, oh, I got cancer. Like, that's not a big deal. That's also a big deal. Something more personal or some other personal disaster rather than a worldwide disaster. But I don't know. Yeah, like, I really think genre is such a great thing to get to play with, because we can say these, like, big, huge things and not have to say them. You know, it's not like we made just a straight up, like, this movie's about friendship. It's like, it's a movie that will draw people in from all different angles, I think.
That's cool. In terms of the actual, like, production of Best Friends Forever, you guys said you've been working on it for about 3 years. What did you guys actually shoot on? Did you go film or did you go digital?
We shot on Super 16. We shot on film.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, and it's expensive.
My God. Well, you know what? I mean, yes and no. I will say, I always tell people, like, well, our post costs about as much as it costs us to make the movie. And everybody's like, whoa. And I'm like, but we did shoot on film. Yeah. So, I mean, there are things that I thought really helped about shooting film. One, it looks fucking amazing. Like, it's so
beautiful. The footage we've seen looks beautiful. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, thank you. And then also, there's like, it ended up, you save money on color correction. I mean, we did some fun stuff with the color in this movie because I wanted the movie to start looking weirder and weirder throughout the movie. So I spent a little bit more time than I actually needed to messing with the color, but it already was so beautiful, like, when we looked at the raw footage. Whereas I feel like when you look at the raw footage from like a Red or something, you're like, ooh, like, that's a little, like, you just have to spend time tweaking that color. And so we saved time there. And then we also, I mean, whether or not it's a good thing, it put a limit to how much we shot and how much time we could spend on things. So when you're shooting a movie that, you know, you have such a low budget and such a limited amount of shoot days, it really helped, because it wasn't like we didn't have a ton, we didn't do playback for everybody, which is horrifying as a director who's in the movie. I mean, we had playback on this little tiny video camera that I would watch, but we didn't have like giant monitors. We didn't have, you know, and then we also couldn't shoot 20 takes of things. Which is the difference between, like Ash was saying, that movie Homecoming, like, we got to like sit around and improv and do all sorts of stuff with that movie all day, which was super fun. But it just, it's a time consuming thing. Whereas Best Friends Forever, since we shot on location in the middle of nowhere, we just didn't have the time to do that kind of thing. And it kind of helped because it was like, oh, I only have 1500 feet of film to shoot today, which if anybody knows anything about film,
terrifying.
It's like, it's fucking nothing. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So it's like, you know, we literally ran out of film at one point. We had to like have someone fly it
so
in.
Crazy.
You know, and it was like, we just had to like, you know, we had to just like go with it, you know? And that was, so it limited us in like kind of nice ways, I think. Yeah. And it wasn't so cost prohibitive that it made our movie more expensive. I mean, I think we would have spent, you know, a little bit less money, but not so much less that it would have made it like, the difference between like, oh, we're going to make our money back on this movie and we're not. It's not that kind of thing. I think it's totally possible for, especially Super 16, because it's a little bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. But I think it's totally possible for indie movies to shoot on film if they really want to.
So did most of your script actually end up making it into the film? Did you have to cut anything that you were scared to cut? Or?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, there's one major scene that got cut where the bomb happens and they feel it and stuff. And that was kind of a weird scene. Anyway, there was a major scene that got cut. And then we also shot the entire movie. We shot for 17 days in Texas and cut it together. And the only problem with shooting on film was that we didn't have dailies back because it was a nightmare. So we had to ship them off and we'd get dailies back like 3 days later, I guess.
Wow.
So we got back our dailies from a couple days and, one of our lenses wasn't calibrated correctly.
Oh, shit.
Oh, crap.
So there was an entire scene that was out of focus. And there was a lot of other stuff that was out of focus. So that was a big, big issue. So we ended up but we edited it together anyway. And we're like, we'll just reshoot those scenes. And we watched it and we didn't like the ending. And so we actually reshot the entire ending of the movie. So the last, like, 20 minutes of the movie are all reshoots, and then there's a couple scenes within there that are reshoots as well. So we ended up doing 5 days of reshoots.
Oh, wow. So you're a lot happier with the new ending than the old ending?
The old ending was very much like friendship, you know, whatever, and then we ended up making the ending a little bit more horror and scary and apocalyptic. Mm. Not super that, but like a little bit more dangerous, I think. I think worked out a lot better.
Excellent. Excellent. So you guys went to Kickstarter to help with some of this stuff in post, correct?
Yeah.
So how did that work out for you? Because, I mean, your campaign was successful, which is great and always kind of nerve wracking. But what made you guys decide to use Kickstarter? And do you think it's actually, you know, a viable option for filmmakers?
I love that you said it's kind of nerve wracking.
It was nerve-wracking watching your Kickstarter campaign when I have
thank you.
But I've not invested in it. I was just like, are they going to get it?
No, because we were trying to raise $75,000, which it was, I would say, at some point I was like, this is worse than shooting the movie. This is more stressful than shooting the movie. I have never been so stressed out in my life. I was so... Because, well, for one, for me personally, it felt like, because it's like, there's my photo right there on the front. And, like, it was, like, me talking about it all the time. And, like, I just felt like, one, you're just, like, annoying the hell out of people. And I hated that. Like, I actually don't love doing self-promotion. It's so funny that you're, like, you're promoting the shit out of this movie. And it's, like, I'm doing it, like, with fighting against every bone in my body. But, like, being, like, you know, I do want people to see this thing that I'm working on for 3 years. So the self-promotion thing is really tough. And Kickstarter is just about annoying people to death until they actually like give to your campaign. And it was horrible. Like, so we had three people working on it. Me, Vera Miao, who's my co-star and producer and co-writer, and Stacey Story, who was a producer on the movie, and she's also in the movie. And we literally would take shifts. So at the time I was editing the movie, and it was amazing because the editor and I would go online and see how we were doing that day, which was funny because his money was coming from that. Okay, you're only at like 15,000. And I'm like, yeah, don't worry. We're going to totally do it.
It's like, this better work out, damn it.
And then so I would go and edit during the day. And then at night we would go home and make videos. And I would start hitting up people and get people to write stuff. And we would write thank you notes to everybody who gave. And like, so we did it on shifts. And it was just like, we had meetings every day trying to figure out ways to like, get people to help us. So anytime anybody's like, should I do a Kickstarter campaign for this? I'm like, no. It's really fucking hard. But I'm like, it is a viable option for people. But, you know, it's rough. It's hard to do. It's hard to do when you're trying to still finish a movie, which is like obviously a full-time job unto itself. And for me, I haven't made a dime off of this movie yet, and who knows if I ever will. Like, I'm also having to make a living as an actress, which is also not the easiest thing in the world. So it's just like, if you have the time, I just tell people, I'm like, yeah, just know those are 3 weeks of your life that you're not going to be able to do anything else. Like, you know, I couldn't go on an audition during that time. It was like, I couldn't have possibly made a living.
Well, you guys were working your ass off of that because you were putting out new content for that Kickstarter campaign pretty much all the time. Videos and stuff.
40 something videos we released for it, which was super rad, and people were so nice, like making us little videos, and it was a super, people really came out and helped, and it was so nice seeing people, and people are so supportive and still like, they come up to me and like, hey, I gave you your Kickstarter campaign. I'm like, oh my God, I love you. I'm sorry I haven't sent you a DVD yet. But it also has been things like that. Like, I don't think we would be putting out DVDs except that we had a Kickstarter campaign. We promised people DVDs. So we're trying to figure out a way to put out, you know, to make 700 DVDs, which is like, you know, we don't have any money left. So we're like having to try to figure out like how to fill all these Kickstarter things that we're supposed to do. And we sent out our postcards and some posters and stuff.
I was going to say, yours, I've donated to a lot of Kickstarters, and I actually got something from yours.
Oh,
and yours is the only one I've ever received anything from. So
that's awesome. And it was probably handwritten by me or Vera.
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. We just, we sat in front of the television one day and like, just listened to like CNN. Cause it was like during an election or something. I don't know what we were listening to, but we just listened to him. Like, we just spent like two full days, like sitting there writing stuff and putting stamps on things and that kind of, it was crazy.
Your situation with the DVDs is actually, from what I've heard about Kickstarter, is super common, is that people, you would go do the Kickstarter thing, you get all the benefits put together, and then at the end of the day, like, because people don't realize that Kickstarter takes a chunk out of what you get from there, and then...
Right, you end up giving about 10% to them, and then to credit card processing.
Yeah, and then there's processing fees, and then, you know... And then you're actually paying for production on your stuff. The money is actually going towards things you still have to do. And then it's like, oh God, we still have to fulfill, you know, like planning that money into the Kickstarter sometimes is really hard to figure out, like what the total cost will be at the end of the day. And
we thought we did, but, you know, the things that we didn't put into, we were like, well, you know, like we didn't put into like, oh, just stuff like festivals, like, you know, sending stuff to festivals or like, you know, and then just like the post costs, post office costs for to send stuff ended up being a lot more than we'd ever planned. Because and sending DVDs and sending stuff overseas, like because people gave from everywhere, and then we're like, shit, we have to send postcard we send overseas. That's like $2 or something you know, like it triples the price or something.
Adds up fast. So, I just remember sending out my wedding announcements to like 100 people, and we were like, what the hell? That's like $200. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, we spent a lot of money on posts. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the weird thing about an indie movie is that like these, I mean, I think it's rapidly, rapidly changing. It's so funny because I was talking to someone yesterday and they're like, oh, well, like movies like the one I'm making right now, they're like, they make all their money on DVDs. And I'm like, no, they don't. Not anymore. Like now they make their movies on VOD. Like people make it's rapidly changing, and I think – and DVDs are getting to the point where it's almost, like, obsolete. Cause I think collectors and fans buy DVDs, but I don't – I think the average person is leaning more and more towards, you know, getting it for video on demand or through cable, like getting – especially, like, movies of this size. So, like, I don't even know if we would be doing DVDs except that we have to send them to our Kickstarter. I mean, I know we wouldn't be.
You've even seen there's even been like a lot of comedians lately that have been opting to do their own specials and then put them out through their own websites on video on demand and just like go straight to the people, you know?
Yeah. Because I think people, you know, I mean, because it's you can release it for a little bit cheaper. I mean, not necessarily like, you know, iTunes and all that kind of stuff. They set their own prices. Like, we don't get to say that. But like for that kind of stuff, you set your own price and then you... people just pay you, you know what, you know, I don't know. I think it's, I just think in probably 2 years, I think there will be so many less DVDs out there. Yeah. I think it's going to just all be digital.
I agree too. I mean, it seems like even with games and such, we're definitely going down that road. You know, digital is kind of the way to go. But before we get off the topic of the Kickstarter campaign, we have a silly story to tell. When you were promoting your Best Friends Forever campaign, we tweeted out one time, like, hey, you know, donate to this campaign and we'll buy you pizza at Comic-Con. Never thinking that people would be like, where's our pizza?
So we,
so we get to Comic-Con last year, and this was last year, and we had all these people tweeting us like, hey, we're at Comic-Con, where's our fucking pizza?
Oh my god, are you serious?
Yeah. Well, the problem was, I think like Allison Hayslip retweeted us or something like that, and then it had a little bit more reach than we were expecting, so we still owe people pizza for your movie.
to be fair, I remember myself saying,
oh yeah,
Matt. To be fair, I remember myself saying, hey, you might want to be careful making a promise like that. You never know what will happen to that tweet. And he's like, ah, no one's going to do anything. It's fine. And I'm like, all right. And then sure enough, like, you know, Allison Hayslip, who has like 20 million followers or whatever, is like, retweet pizza. And I was like, oh, screw it. We're done.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
There goes our entire budget for the website. All it's to pizza.
Okay. Either hopefully they've forgotten by now.
I think perhaps we'll see. They'll probably beat me up at this year's Comic-Con, but we'll see.
Yeah. Oh wow.
So you finally got to debut Best Friends Forever at Slam Dance this year, correct? Is that where it first showed? Tell us a little bit about that experience and kind of how, obviously you're going to say it felt great, but I kind of want to know a little bit more about what it was like finally showing it to an audience and kind of how the audience reacted to the film and what the Slam Dance experience was like.
Yeah, well, I mean, for people who don't know, Slam Dance is super cool. It's a festival that happens during Sundance in the same city, but they just hold it at a different hotel, and their whole thing is they do actual indie movies, and like to be up for like in the narrative competition category, which we were in, you have to make your movie. It has to be a first-time director, and it has to be under a certain budget too. I think it's like $1 million or something. So it's like actual indie movies for indie filmmakers. It's not like Sundance has indie movies, but it's like, oh, they made this for like $6 million and Daniel Radcliffe is in it. You know, so it's like, that's not really indie when I think of indie. So it's a really cool festival. And my, I had a couple friends that had done stuff with them. Amber Benson had her
movie.
I
love Amber Benson.
Yeah. And she had her movie Drones there, which is how I kind of heard about the festival. And I'd seen that movie at Fantastic Fest and I just thought it was amazing. And so, so we ended up getting into that festival, which was super cool and I think like the perfect place for us. And we were like crazy nervous because the problem with Slam Dance is that it's just like a little bit away from Sundance and you have to kind of convince people to go because, I mean, it has its own following and there are people who just go to Slam Dance. They don't do Sundance or whatever. But we had to like, you know, we're trying to sell the movie, so we had to like convince distributors to go and people were basically like, you won't sell the movie there, like, you know, whatever. It's like a small festival. No, everybody only cares about Sundance. And people were really like, you know, kind of crapping, especially like, you know, people who go to Sundance and that's like their thing. Yeah. Anyway, so we like, you know, papered the town with our players, like just like went crazy up and down the streets, like putting our posters, handing out postcards and stuff. And we get there. I get there like the day we're about to do the screening, and there's like a line around the corner. And I was like, "Oh god!" And then, it was amazing. And then we like walk in. I like everybody goes in, and we're like, and it's standing room only. People sat in the aisles of the theater, and like I of course had been drinking because I'm a nervous wreck, and I, you know. What I basically said at some point, I was like, acting is sort of like, you know, people are always like, acting is bearing your soul. And I'm like, no, acting is like just sort of like putting yourself out there to be judged. Making a movie is bearing your soul. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's not like that I like feel like it's 100% me on the screen and blah, blah, blah. I just feel like it's very like, if you're going to judge something in the movie, it's definitely going to be me. Like my face is on it. My, you know, I directed it. I wrote it. Did all the posts. So it was just like really nerve-wracking, but it was amazing. So people just were like, in the crowds, and they were like laughing and like gasping, and like it was just like a crazy, amazing experience. Totally amazing. We didn't actually do because the funny thing about that was we ended up getting 4 distribution offers on the ground there, which everybody's like, you won't get any. It's so hard to get an offer at a film festival these days unless it's Sundance. And it was like, we got 4. I mean, like, so it was just like such a crazy thing. And people especially were super scared of our movie because it's not a straight up genre movie, because it has like, you know, this friendship element, 2 female leads, and like
you know, it doesn't have anybody super duper famous in it. And we met with all these sales agents, and like, they were all like, we just don't know how to market your movie. We don't know what else to do. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, and so we ended up going there without a sales agent, which is a person who basically invites distributors and gets your movie sold. And then we met someone down there who was like, oh, I'll do it. Like this amazing lawyer team, like, who've been incredible. Like they were like, we'll do it. We'll help you out. And they invited some people, like a couple of distributors. I invited a couple of distributors, and then, yeah, and we got 4 offers while we were there, which is just insane. And so we ended up not doing that many more festivals and stuff because we already signed contracts for the movie to be released, which is awesome.
That is a great debut then. I mean, you hear so many horror stories, like people work their asses off and then like nobody shows up, or, you know, people just kind of walk out. But that is just, you know, the total opposite. So congratulations. That's super cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it's very much, I mean, unfortunately, a movie that plays very well in an audience that within a theater. So it's unfortunate that most people would experience it on VOD probably by themselves. But either way, I mean, yeah, it was just an amazing experience.
That's awesome. So we're finally to the point where the movie is about to be released to the public very, very soon. So yeah. Where can people find this movie now that we've talked about it for a while? How can people get their hands on it?
It's out on iTunes. Well, I'm actually going to pull it up right now so I don't forget when we're on places. But it's on iTunes on Monday, July 1st.
Okay.
Monday, July 1st on iTunes. And then everywhere else, July 5th. And that includes like Cox Cable, Time Warner Cable, like all the sort of cable platforms, as well as online like Amazon.
So you can literally just get it on demand. Like,
yeah, it's on demand. It's on demand. We actually are going through, I believe it's through on demand, through almost every cable outlet. And then also online, like through our distributor is Gravitas, and they have a YouTube platform, but you can also get it through, I think you can get it through Xbox. I think you can get it. And then, you know, obviously Amazon. These are the places I download things. So I'm like, oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't know where everyone else watches things. Like, like Google Play. And I'm like, what is Google Play? That's a thing. And like,
So iTunes on the 1st, and then pretty much every place else on the 5th, which is just incredible. I mean, that's awesome. And you're going to be like standing by your computer clicking, like, who is watching this? Where are they watching it from? That's so exciting.
Yeah. The crazy thing is iTunes is like the one where everybody's like, you know, you have to, because iTunes has like, you know, cornered that online market. They have like 75% of the market. And yeah, so I'm basically going to be telling people on Monday, like, buy it on iTunes because it'll help us get on their front page, which makes like a huge difference or whatever. Because if you sell enough on, it just automatically goes to their front page if you sell enough, which is cool.
Oh, that is super cool. That is super cool. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely do our best to, you know, to help plug it because we think you're awesome.
you guys are awesome.
Yeah. Oh. So we have some community questions. I know. We're so nice. we did ask our community some questions for you. So this is sort of our lightning round / community questions. This one's from Chris Jenkins, who on Twitter is at Cloglip, and he says, what are some unexpected joys or challenges of working in film, TV, and comics?
Oh my God.
Unexpected joys or challenges. That's kind of a really broad question, but
it's really broad. My goodness. Unexpected joys or challenges. I mean, I'm trying to think of ones that are unexpected because all the things I'm thinking are very expected. Like, I mean, nice people. I think, you know, I think it's always, I mean, for example, like, I am always, like, surprised by, like, how much I like doing what I get to do, because there will be days before I go to shoot something and I'm just like dreading it. Cause I'm just like, ah, crap. I have like a 12-hour day tomorrow, you know, I'm going to work till 4 a.m. and what, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm there and I'm just like, wow, I would never want to be anywhere else. Like, I mean, yes, we work like crazy hours and stuff, but, but it's like, it's totally worth it in the end. And it's like that time warp where you're doing something that you like and you're like, oh my God, it's already been like 13 hours today. Like I've been on set for like that long. Like it's totally, totally worth it. Challenges, like as far as like directing the movie, I didn't expect, like, I thought all the decisions would be super clear cut. Like I thought I'd be able to go like, oh yeah, of course it's this. And then of course this is this, you know, but instead it would be like, oh, I'm having to make a like a choice on like the sound of an explosion in the movie. And I'm like, God, I don't know. Like both of those sound like great explosions. Like, you know, like, and that was really tough, which I think is why really good directors are so focused on what they want. And for me, since it was my first project, there was a lot of times where I'd be like, fuck, dude, I don't know. Like, I don't, like, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I need it to sound like, you know, or whatever. I feel like every song I picked out worked out amazingly. Like, how do I know which one is best? You know, yeah. It was that there's no cut and dry answer. And that was a little bit harder than I expected, I think.
I mean, that is a super broad question, but good answer. The next question is, are you planning on writing or directing another feature?
Yeah, I'm in the process of writing a couple. I actually finished one that is a much more straightforward genre movie that I like. I don't know if I'll direct it. I think I want to enjoy the process. I think if I direct something else, I would like to direct something somebody else wrote.
Yeah.
So it would or obviously something I'm not in. So it's like a little of both, you know, like
yeah.
I liked directing, I liked writing, I liked acting, but doing all three at the same time, it kind of felt like, I felt a little bit like I didn't have enough collaboration, which I think is why you do that stuff, you mm-hmm. know? And so I would like to interpret
someone
else's
so many responsibilities. I mean, that's just a lot of hats to be wearing at the same time, you know?
It is, but you know, it's not even that. It was just that I felt like it was a little bit of the Bria Grant show, you know? So it's almost like the reason I like acting is because I take someone else's stuff and get to interpret it through the lens mm-hmm. of my life, you know? And I didn't get to do that with this, you know? So it was sort of like, while it was like interesting to see like, oh my God, that's the costume you think my character would wear. That's so interesting to me that you like have that interpretation. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I would rather be doing something if I wrote and directed, I just wouldn't want to be in it, or, you know, and I get to see someone else's interpretation of my work, or I'd want to take someone else's thing and make it into a real life thing. But the answer is maybe.
There you go. And plus, it also sounds like you're still kind of in recovery mode from doing all this for 3 years. So it's like the last thing you want to do. Yeah.
I'm in like I just showing up to set, knowing my lines, and then like, you know, goofing around for like, you know, however long I'm there, and then just going home and going to bed. Like that is the
I do not blame you. Justin Banks, who is at Midtown583 on Twitter, he says, what is your favorite movie of all time? That's such a hard question. I'm sorry.
I know.
You know,
I don't have one. I hate to be like, I don't have a movie where I'm like, that is the best movie ever made ever. I'm the movie that like, if it's on or if I catch it and it still like makes me, like it's a nostalgic movie for me, is Wizard of Oz.
Oh wow!
Randomly of all
my
movies,
wife's favorite movie.
It is.
Yeah, of all time, her favorite.
She's a super.
There's something about that movie that's so magical, and I think for me, when I was a little girl, I loved different worlds and the idea of there being a different universe, which I think is why I'm drawn to like the apocalyptic genre a little bit, but like. Which, if you think about it, Wizard of Oz is a little apocalyptic, you know? Like, it's like,
yeah.
She's gone into this other world. Her world, like, has been, like, pulled away by a tornado. Like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, an old school apocalyptic movie. And I think, like, that movie really, yeah. I mean, and then, you know, and she's, like, searching for herself, but really herself is always, like, right there in front of her.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the most amazing story to me. And that is a movie, when it comes on, I'm just, like, every time I watch it, I'm blown away by it.
That is so cool. So we have a signature question that we ask everybody that comes on our show, and it's And the question is, what is your secret nerdy hobby or passion, or just your hobby or passion that you're kind of almost too embarrassed to admit, but something that you either collect or you do, you know, in secret? What is your secret nerdy hobby or passion? Such a hard question. Yeah, it doesn't.
I know, especially because we live in this world where I post like photos of like my toenails or something.
Yeah.
On the internet. You know what I do almost every day, which is really, I think my boyfriend finds it very strange, is that I look on cooking websites and cooking blogs, and I actually look at one that like aggregates all these recipes. I cook vegan, like at home. We eat vegan at home. And so I literally look up vegan recipes like every day. And there's one website called Finding Vegan where it's like literally just like, it's like an aggregator for like all these blogs. And I go through like every single one and look at the ingredients. And then I save them all to like this weird like file where I like, so I have like hundreds and hundreds of vegan recipes to choose from because I do cook like several times a week and I bake a lot. I make a lot of like cookies and stuff. So I like, I spend more time than I should looking at that every week. And then I got panicky this week because I was like, oh my God, I haven't looked at recipes for like, cause I've been working and I'm like, so I'm like 7 days behind on looking up the recipes, you know, of all these blogs that I read. So that's like, there's probably like 1,000 for me to look through. And I got like panicky, like trying to figure out how I'm going to look through that many when I get back home. But my boyfriend thinks it's really funny. Cause
do you ever search on
and, like, look on Reddit or something. And I'm like going through recipes.
That's hilarious.
Do you ever search on Pinterest? Cause that's what my wife does to find recipes is that she looks there and then pins the recipes.
Oh, yeah. I do have a Pinterest. I have, like, a private Pinterest for my recipes of the ones that worked really well.
Yeah, there you
so,
go.
Like, I keep that one. I share with my mom. My mom and I share recipes on that. But otherwise, I don't do the Pinterest thing. For some reason, I haven't gotten as into it as everyone else has because I feel like it might take over my life.
Yeah, like, for sure.
I have a person who gets really addicted to that.
That's a valid concern.
It is. It is a very different
yeah. site.
So thank you so much. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to follow you on Twitter or your own personal website and stuff?
Yeah.
What are all your links and such?
Twitter is Bria Grant, B-R-E-A, and then my website is briagrant.com, so very easy.
Cool. And again, it's, we'll see, July 1st. You can get Best Friends Forever on iTunes. And then July, I think you said 5th, every place else on the planet, you can get Best Friends Forever. So definitely download that, guys, and let Bria know how you liked the film. Only if you liked it. If you didn't like it, then don't tell her.
Throw it away, put it in your trash can, and never contact me ever again. Don't you dare write a fucking review.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a long time coming, so we're super happy we had you on.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, we're back. Hope you guys enjoyed our chat with Bria Grant from Best Friends Forever. Inspired by our chat with her and the release of her movie, which you should also go get right now, was our Naquato this week, which was, who would you bring with you on a cross-country post-apocalyptic road trip? So with that, let's get to our responses.
All right, so eChap33 Eric says, Patrick Swayze's Dalton character from Roadhouse would be a great road trip companion. Pain don't hurt.
Roadhouse.
That's not Patrick Swayze. That was just me yelling, pain don't hurt.
Yeah.
I would hate to travel cross country with Roadhouse Patrick Swayze.
Well,
because he would just
like
fight everyone, right? He would just like box everyone you encountered.
But I need to tell Eric this. I hope Eric's listening. My old neighborhood in Brooklyn, Park Slope, had one of the most amazing barbecue restaurants called Pork Slope, which is the best name ever created. And it is a Roadhouse themed barbecue restaurant
nice.
In the middle of Park Slope, Brooklyn. So you should go. You should go to Pork Slope and have delicious food, beer, and hang out in a Roadhouse themed barbecue restaurant.
Nice.
All right. Chris Taylor, who is at Shockwaver on Twitter, he says, Buddy Christ for his bread fish summoning ability. I never thought of it as a summoning ability. Anyway, how much mana does that take? He says fluid fire because obviously fluid fire because it's his
because
wife.
Obviously.
And you guys, so we can all remember gaming. It's true. We will just follow you around the apocalypse and talk about video games. So we got your back.
We'll sit in the back seat and podcast like in the back seat.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Amanda at Fluid Fire says, I was going to say Chris, but he can run faster than me. So she says no. I suddenly understand why he wants me around.
Oh,
and that's true love.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
So next up is Justin Banks. Good buddy, Justin Banks at Midtown 583. And I'm going to correct his tweet right now. he would bring Lara Croft, not Laura Croft, my friend. She's basically a grown-up Ellie.
It didn't Conan O'Brien say it was Laura Croft?
Yeah, yeah. If you guys, if everybody out there is not listening or watching the, what's he call it? The gamer.
Conan O'Brien's shit. Gaming series.
Yeah, it's his gaming hilarious. Review series. It's called,
Non-Gamers or something like
Clueless
that.
Clueless Gamer.
Clueless Gamer, yeah. If you're not watching Clueless Gamer, go to YouTube right now and watch every single one he's put up because they are the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. He actually, the last one he just did was at E3. He went to E3 and videotaped him at E3.
Wow.
And he's like walking around just lost. He has no idea what he's doing. And he goes to the PS4 and he's like talking to them and he's like, so obviously everybody wants to know what's the better system. And he's like, and since you're the guy I'm talking to right now, I'm going to say the PS4. and the guy's like, oh, okay, cool. And then he goes to Xbox after that, and he's like, since I talked to you second, I'm going to say the Xbox One is the best system out there. And then the last one he goes to is the Wii U, and he plays Mario Kart. And he wins, and he starts freaking out because he's never won a video game before.
Wow!
And he's like jumping up and down, and he's like, "I won a video game!" It's like it's brilliant. God, he's ridiculously funny. But Clueless Gamer and him at E3, every gamer fan should go watch because they're all really funny.
Good stuff. Chris Sorry. Jenkins says, "Our Chris Jenkins, who's at Cloglip on Twitter, he says Nick Offerman because that dude can handle anything."
Yes. And I give him props for saying Nick Offerman and not
Ron Swanson.
Yeah. Because I agree, the real Nick Offerman, first of all, funnier. Second of all, really does know how to do a ton of shit. So
yeah. I think Ron Swanson is pretty much based on Nick Offerman.
He kinda is, yeah, in a weird way.
Okay, so Teresa at MetFan says Sergeant Hicks, Michael Biehn. Twofold purpose, strong and handsome. I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah. And a nice guy.
And a nice guy.
Who agreed to be on our show. Which
we
is
got
weird.
A reply from Facebook as well.
Yes, we got a reply on Facebook, which we encourage you to do. Go to our Facebook, our questions get posted there as well. And it's at Danielle it's Danielle Toddle. You can put an ad, I think, in Facebook.
Sure, you can now.
I would probably bring someone with a good sense of humor, someone like Russell Brand. Man, I think that would be hilarious for like 3 days. And then on the fourth day, I'd be like, all right, dude, turn it off for like a minute.
Like we are fucking starving to death. Please.
But that would be awesome.
I just had this mental image of Russell Brand like acting like Mick Jagger foraging for food.
But you would kind of want somebody funny, right? Like you wouldn't want, like if you brought like a downer, you'd be like, oh good lord, like we're never gonna make it through this.
Yeah. So who would you guys bring?
Oh, we didn't answer ours, did we?
No, we didn't.
That's tough.
Well, I'd bring my wife, of course. Even though she doesn't even listen to this podcast, it doesn't even matter.
Well, other
so
than
no, I wouldn't bring her. No, I'm kidding. I'll bring her.
Digging that hole.
I would bring. Can they be fictional? Did we say fictional?
Sure.
I think
other people went fictional, so.
I'm going to bring Thor.
There you go.
Wow.
You could just like ride on his back as he flew around through the skies.
Fly around the skies with his hammer, and I'll just sit on his back, like, yeah. Everybody missed the visual there in the podcast, but
beautiful, beautiful vision of that.
I put my hands like kind of up in my, like, yeah. It was good times.
While riding on Thor's back, it's incredible.
How about you, Ash?
Oh, wow. I guess in honor of Best Friends Forever, other than my wife, who I would not abandon during the apocalypse, I would bring her. But if wives are not an option, I'd probably bring my buddy Mark, who's been my best friend since I was 3. And now he's about to be a cop, so he can shoot people.
Well, you're making me look like an asshole in front of Scott now.
Thor's a good answer, man. I don't know. Unless Scott has thunder powers.
I'm not trying to make you feel bad, but I would take you with me, Matt.
Oh, great.
Because...
I'm the only asshole who brought Thor.
But this is why. Well, because, listen, we've already been on the road together many times. I don't like to drive. Everybody knows this. So you would drive. I would be the navigator. This has already been established. I think it's pretty easy, you know?
Yeah,
that's true.
And then I don't know who else we'd bring. Probably
we'd have Thor.
We'd have Thor.
Maybe that's the deal. It'd be you, me, and Thor.
Well, I would like to then, I would also bring Elizabeth Mitchell, because that's what she does. She did it in Lost. She did it in Revolution. So if we need somebody to take us across country.
So,
like,
so what you're saying is you're going to bring Elizabeth Mitchell and not your wife.
Well, I thought wives were not part of the equation. Didn't we already rule that out for this?
I'm just being a bigger asshole.
That's like the RSTLNE. We already know that they're included, and then we just have to pick other people to bring with us. Yeah, see? So I'm just CYA. I got it.
I don't even know what the fuck these acronyms mean. I have
Cover
no
your
idea.
Ass, man. Cover yeah. Your ass.
All right, so that's pretty much it for this week's episode of the Rated
Unscathed.
NA podcast. next week, I think we have a traditional episode, and hopefully all four of us will be here, and we will open what's inside of that secret
box.
Yeah, what's in the box? And I'm excited to see what's in the box, and it's going to be hard to wait a week, but I will wait a week.
I think
big
it's going to kill Hillary. She's been writing me all week long, like, when do I get to open this?
Oh, my God. Wait.
Yeah, we forgot to say why Hillary isn't here.
Oh, yeah. Why is Hillary not here?
She was running down that dock again, and this time she tripped down her dock at her mansion, and she fell into this moat that she had built to keep out the regular folk, she said.
Right, right.
And she actually was just – she didn't get hurt this time, but she was, like, covered with mud and stuff from the moat outside of her palace. So she she's just cleaning up, and she'll be back next week.
I heard – but then she got lost trying to find the bathroom, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
That's what I heard happened. She's been wandering around.
I'd actually had heard that she fell into this moat, right? And then when she got up, it was like medieval times, like, you know, Martin Lawrence's Black Knight. You guys remember that? So she, went to King Arthur's court with Martin Lawrence, and they, like, took care of business, right? So that's that's what I remember happening.
I don't even know what's happening. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, huge thanks to Bria Grant for hanging out this episode, and hopefully you guys go and pick up Best Friends Forever. It's on iTunes, and as of the 5th, it'll be pretty much everywhere.
Amazon, Google.
Yeah, all over the place. And actually, I'm really excited to finally check it out. You guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us all directly. That's Ash, Matt, Scott, or Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And of course, we're all over the place. Please drop by our iTunes and subscribe and do all that fun stuff.
And yes, I'm going to announce right now, I am actually going to add Leviathan Wakes to our Goodreads account.
Whoa!
Yeah, do it.
And start talking about it and spread a little love on Facebook with it. I'm Scott read this book. I'm reading it currently. I'm in love with it. It's an awesome book. So I'm going to put it up there, and we're going to talk about it.
Only took us like 6 months to get that going.
Six short months to get that moving. One new Kindle later, and Goodreads is in action.
All right.
Thank you guys so much.
And we will see you guys next week.
See ya.
Does someone want to bring us back into the Naquado?
Sure. Yeah, do you want to do it, Matt?
I'll do it. Or do you want to pick up that ball you fumbled before? And
yeah, I'm going to find this damn question here.
I'm looking.
Okay, you ready? Inspired by our chat with her and the release of her movie, which you should also go get right now, was our Naquado this week, which was... I can't find it again.
I clapped. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
Cut all that out.
No, we're going to go with it. We have weaknesses here. You know, like Hillary and Ash will read anything that's on the teleprompter, and I just can't read. So I think it all evens out in the end.